Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. At the end of September 2025, snapback. What is that? What is JCPOA? What is the contest between Washington and Tehran? Is it about the suspect nuclear program? Is it about a deal that was cut in 2015 by the Obama administration and Tehran? Is it about anything in particular that can be acted upon before there's another contest such as the 12-day war? I welcome Andrea Stricker of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing most recently National Interest. We'll do some fundamentals. Andrea, snapback is now in place. This is the UN imposing severe sanctions, not only to do with the economy, but with weapon systems. All of that on Tehran. Tehran did nothing to stop it. All it had to do was comply with demands of inspection after the 12-day war, and it would not. Therefore, the original document, the JCPOA of 2015, what do we need to know about it today? And what does snapback tell us about what's going on right now? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. The U.S. and Europe have really pulled off an amazing feat in securing the snapback of U.N. sanctions against Iran that had expired a couple of years ago or were lifted under the 2015 nuclear deal. And the JCPOA was essentially a temporary agreement that put in place caps on Iran's ability to enrich uranium, the amount of uranium it could make, the types of centrifuges it could use and the facilities it could use. But it actually allowed the program to grow starting around 2025, so this year. And so it really kicked the can down the road on the nuclear program. And it would have had international legitimacy when Iran was able to reach very low breakout times or a short ability to make nuclear weapons as soon as those restrictions would sunset at the beginning of 2031. And so because Iran was not complying with the deal for many years, the U.S. had left it in 2018. There was this one hanging string left to pull to put the sanctions back into effect. These are sanctions that the Security Council passed from 2006 to 2010. And one of those key demands was that Iran stop enriching uranium, which is a key fuel for nuclear weapons. That's now back in effect as a matter of international law. And so I think the U.S. and E3 deserve some congratulations for this.
And I congratulate them. And is there thinking about collecting what we know to be 60% fissile material in Iran that has never been located since the B-2 raid? Are they going to go get it and take it out?
I think what they'll have to do is essentially wait for Iran to excavate that material and then decide what to do about it. It's likely buried under several sites, likely in the Fordow enrichment facility, which is 60 to 90 meters below a mountain, and then potentially in the Esfahan tunnels, which are still inaccessible. Iran is working to excavate the tunnel entrances that the United States collapsed with Tomahawk missiles in June. And then there may be some other enriched uranium underground at the Natanz facility and elsewhere. But Israel, I think, in particular, is looking closely at whether there's something they can do to probably destroy that highly enriched uranium or other enriched uranium and prevent Iran from using it to make weapons-grade material for nuclear weapons.
Is there a statement from the UN or from our European allies that Iran must not rebuild its suspect nuclear weapons program? Has anybody told them they cannot do this?
It's mainly fallen to the United States to make that demand. And if we recall, the Trump administration demanded back in February 2025 that Iran stop enriching uranium and fully permanently, verifiably dismantle all of its nuclear weapons activities and facilities. And they gave Iran 60 days to do so. And we saw right at the end of that 60-day period, also the day after the IAEA found Iran in noncompliance with the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, that Israel started the strikes. So the troubling issue, though, is that Steve Witkoff, the Trump administration's special envoy on the Iran talks, he had apparently given them terms of a deal that would allow the regime to retain low-level enrichment for a period of a few years before joining a regional consortium that has yet to be set up that would include other Middle Eastern states. I think there are some issues with that proposal, namely that Iran would still retain enrichment, the fuel to make nuclear weapons, and would be able to create a new nuclear crisis down the line. And so if we don't have the U.S. and also Europe on board with no enrichment, then I think it's a strategic mistake, and they're simply going to have to resurrect this crisis down the line and have to take additional military action to stop Iran.
In your article in the National Interest, you have recommendations to avoid that that military confrontation in the future. So let's speak of those. There's much to trade here. Sanctions relief can come altogether or at a time. What do you recommend to begin sanctions relief? What must Iran either do or give up?
Iran has to agree to the Trump administration's original demands for the full dismantlement of enrichment, weaponization, which is the process to construct nuclear bombs, and likely missile restrictions. And then the administration may want to add other demands, such as that it halt support for terrorism and stop oppressing its people. I think the regime is in a bad position. They don't have a lot of leverage. They are still decimated militarily and with their missile program after the June strikes. And I think what we see is the regime is unable to even avoid the snapback of sanctions in September and really doesn't have a lot to use until it's able to rebuild its programs. But it remains to be seen whether this is a regime that can actually make the decision to moderate its behavior and seek sanctions relief for real trade-offs, or if they will essentially go down with the ship.
In the meantime, the U.S. and our European allies are not exactly fully informed about how Iran works, I believe. There's a supply chain that was never solved. Can it be solved, the dual-use technology that Iran depends upon?
I think the Western powers and key supplier states need to be really on guard for Iranian illicit procurements of nuclear-related goods, because if they do seek to resurrect their enrichment capabilities, they're going to need a lot of equipment from abroad. That includes high-tech equipment, materials, all of the types of goods that you need to make centrifuges and the equipment involved. They may even want to import uranium from abroad. And so we need all supplier nations to be prepared for this and to inform their companies and shipping authorities that Iran will be on the lookout for this, and that they don't want to run afoul of U.S. or European or U.N. sanctions at this point and face serious financial penalties.
Is there talk anywhere, Andrea, of another kind of deal, of less than zero enrichment deal, of something that looks like JCPOA? Has that emerged anywhere?
This came about mostly with the Witkoff proposal, because up until May, the U.S. demand was no enrichment. But then there were reports that we had offered something like low-level enrichment for a while, followed by a regional consortium. But doing this would essentially allow Iran to retain its entire enrichment supply chain. So all of the capabilities that it would try to rehabilitate and resurrect, it could keep those and make a secret enrichment plant potentially. So I think any type of enrichment by Iran, in Iran, outside of Iran, anywhere, should just be a non-starter. And it's my understanding that the European countries are not truly on board with a zero enrichment proposal. So they seem prepared to accept low-level enrichment on a small level. And I think unless we get our ducks in a row on what we're asking from Iran and switch back to a full dismantlement demand, then we're headed for more trouble.
Mr. Grossi is openly campaigning for General Secretary of the United Nations. Good for him. But in the meantime, the IAEA, is it making demands on Iran right now that are not being complied with? We've got 30 seconds.
The IAEA has tried with no avail, even trying to reach a deal for inspections in Cairo. And Iran is just refusing to allow IAEA access, except to oversee the refueling of the Russian-built Bushehr reactor. And so we have a major NPT compliance crisis coming ahead.
Andrea Stricker of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, laying down exactly where we are with regard to the suspect nuclear weapons program that, though badly damaged, profoundly damaged in the raid by the B-2s, it is the intention of the Iranian regime to continue to provoke the West by claiming they're rebuilding.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.